All right. Plausible deniability in the CIA. Plausible deniability is a concept that pops up at various points throughout history. However, it was the CIA who named the concept as we know it today. The CIA used the term to describe the act of withholding information about illegal or immoral activity from senior officials so as to protect them in case that information becomes public. Otherwise, people expect those in executive positions to take responsibility for the actions of their subordinates. In fact, in Japan, executives have gone as far as committing suicide, or I guess they call it harikiri, right? When a subordinate dishonored their company. Then they discussed the Hughes-Ryan Act of 1974. The government passed the Hughes-Ryan Act, which was an amendment to the Foreign Assistance Act of 1969. The Hughes-Ryan Act prohibits the CIA from using funds for covert or secret actions unless the president certifies the operation as essential to the nation's security. The act also dictates that the CIA provides Congress with a timely explanation of the operation they are trying to run. The government passed the Hughes-Ryan Act in response to disgust shown both by Congress and the public and the way the CIA handled the Vietnam War. The government also hoped that by passing the act, the United States could avoid entangling itself in another war by mistake as a result of bungled covert operations. However, in the decades that followed, the act ultimately proved to be a failure. The CIA learned how to get around the act by failing to provide Congress with a full picture about the covert actions they planned. So, in other words, the CIA has been using plausible deniability since the Vietnam War and the Hughes-Ryan Act. Under the subheading of overconfidence and plausible deniability, confidence is a good skill to have. Now, this applies directly to Creepy Joe, especially if an individual is a leader. However, it can also be a person's downfall if he's not careful. Interestingly, when it comes to confidence, people prefer it be a quiet personality trait rather than someone strutting about, puffing out his chest, and telling you how confident he is. A good example of plausible deniability and overconfidence lies in the way, now listen to this, lies in the way President Donald Trump has often used plausible deniability to his advantage. Hey, legal definition guys, you're going to have to go and rewrite your definition and change it to put Joe Biden in there. And then there's a couple of examples. There was a lawsuit following his arrest, and let's see here. An example of plausible deniability that reached U.S. Supreme Court occurred in the matter of Ashcroft versus Iqbal, which court heard in 2009. In this case, police arrested Javed Iqbal, a Pakistani-American from Hicksville, New York, in November 2001 on charges of conspiracy to defraud the United States and identity theft. Following his arrest and subsequent release, Iqbal filed a lawsuit against, among others, former Attorney General John Ashcroft and former FBI Director Robert Mueller. In the lawsuit, Iqbal alleged that, like hundreds of Arab Muslim men recently before him, the FBI only arrested him for discriminatory reasons. And then they get into the appeal and what the U.S. Supreme Court said about it. And There's stuff about the decision. However, and then you get to this. However, the dissenting opinion, authored by Souter, Stevens, Ginsburg, and Breyer, disagreed. The justices believed that since the defendants admitted they would be liable for their actions if they were aware of their subordinates acting in such a way as to be deliberately discriminatory, they relied on plausible deniability. As such, the dissenting justices believed that Iqbal did, in fact, provide enough facts to back up his claim of unlawful discrimination. And there's more on this. Okay. So you have a working definition now of plausible deniability. You know something is wrong. You might have even participated in it, but you know where the body is buried, and you know that no one else knows, and they're never going to go dig it up and prove it. That's plausible deniability. So, with that, digital media file number two. I'm just going to let this whole thing play. It's 8 minutes long. It's worth the listen so you get the entire context. We can play snippets of it, but you see, one of the reasons why you have the Crusade Channel on today is because I don't have to worry about news, weather, and traffic coming up. If I want to bump any of those elements, we bump them, because when news breaks out, we break in. And when our listeners need to hear something, and we think they need to hear something in its entirety in context, we play it in its entirety in context. So, this is Tony Bobulinski with Tucker Carlson last night. At the end of this clip, you'll hear about Biden's plausible deniability.
So it was clear to you that Joe Biden's son had told him about this business.
Crystal clear.
Crystal clear. Tell us about the conversation that subsequently occurred between you and Joe Biden.
So the conversation, as you're well aware, Tucker, I grew up the son of a career naval officer. So the president of the United States was always the commander in chief, whether they were a Democrat or Republican or other. And so I had the highest respect for Joe and the, the office that he had held. And so I stood up and shook his hand. And obviously we sat down and I think ordered some drinks. I think Jim Biden was hungry and might have ordered some food. And, Joe asked me to talk about my background, my family. He thanked me for my service. I'm obviously very proud of that, proud of my brother's service and my grandfather's service. And then he walked through sort of his family, obviously some of the tragedies they've dealt with, his political career in a high level. We didn't go into too much detail on business because Hunt, prior to Joe showing up, Hunter and Jim had coached me. Listen, we won't go into too much detail here. This is just a high-level discussion and meeting. So it's not like I was drilling down with Joe about cap tables and details.
So you've said that they wanted you to meet Joe Biden as a way to induce you to participate in this deal. You were the actual business guy here who had management experience, deal experience. But it also sounds like Joe Biden was vetting you to some extent.
Yes, of course. Like, I didn't request to meet with Joe. They requested that I meet with Joe. And, he's putting his, and Hunter says this in writing, it was referenced multiple times, they were putting their entire family legacy on the line. They knew exactly what they were doing. They were dealing with a Chinese-owned, enterprise run by Chairman Yi, CFC, that had strong financial support and political support from the Chinese Communist Party. That's how it was presented to me. That's not my own words. That's how they presented it to me and read me in on it. And
they being Gillier and Hunter
they
Biden.
They being Hunter Biden, who was very proud of that and taking credit for it when I sat with him for 2 hours on the patio of the Chateau Marmont in L.A.
Proud that they were doing a deal with the Chinese Communist Party?
Well, proud that they were, that he had the relationship with Chairman Yi, who was running CFC, and the ability for them to get deals done around the world and stuff like that.
You've seen a number of journalists, reporters covering the story, including some who should know better, declare triumphantly that no document you've released connects the former vice president to this deal. How do you react to that? What's your answer to it?
So you can imagine what I've been through over the last couple months, and knowing all this to be fact, and watching Joe Biden and his family and their lawyers trout around the world stating that there was no involvement, or even at the debate, Joe Biden referenced that you've seen my tax returns and there's no money from foreign, enterprises in that. I want to simplify this for the American people as much as I can. On May 13th, that email was sent from James Gillier to me. I didn't generate that email. James Gillier generated that email. And in that email, James Gillier goes through intimate detail of what each individual's requests were from a compensation perspective and how the equity in the enterprise would be divvied up. Very important, May 13th, that email was generated by somebody else to me. In that email, there's a statement where they go through the equity. Jim Biden's referenced as 10%, doesn't say Biden, it says Jim. And then it has 10% for the big guy held by H. I 1,000% sit here and know that the big guy is referencing Joe Biden. That's crystal clear to me because I lived it. I met with the former vice president in person multiple times, and I had been meeting and talking with Hunter Biden and Jim Biden 13th, and Rob Walker and James Gilliar.
I'll explain.
Where the media has tried to hide, and I personally feel it's disgusting, is between that May 13th email and the final document that was executed called Oneida Holdings, LLC. In Oneida Holdings, LLC, the equity is broken up 20% Hunter Biden, 20% Jim Biden. Well, they're LLCs that represented them.
Right.
20% James Gilliar, 20% Rob Walker, and 20% me and my investment entity. What I'd ask the American people to read and look at is how from May 13th to the final Oneida document that got executed, did Jim Biden go from a 10% owner to a 20% owner? That's not my question to answer. I'm sure there were discussions within the Biden family. I wasn't privy to that discussion. But this is Jim Biden, the brother of the potential future president of the United States. It's not a distant cousin. It's not an employee. It's his brother who, in documents, defines himself as a political advisor to his brother. And so I'll leave that to the American people to answer that. But I don't understand how the American journalist is allowing that gap to be even talked about and defined.
So, and I should say,
that's just damning.
And I want to put the document on the screen. In his pitch to the Chinese, in his bio, Jim Biden describes himself as an advisor, a current advisor to his brother. So was it clear to you from the beginning that what Jim Biden was bringing to this deal was his relationship with Joe Biden?
Yeah, 1,000%.
Of course.
Crystal clear. After I met with Joe Biden the morning of May 3rd at the Milken Conference and then was taken backstage after Joe had spoken, you know, we joked around for about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and then I walked him out to his car. I think he was, I think they referenced he was off to see the lieutenant governor.
This is Joe Biden.
Joe Biden, yes.
Yeah.
And then after that, I went over to the Peninsula Hotel and I sat with Jim Biden for 2 hours, where Jim Biden walked through his history and his own words stating all the work and effort he did to get Joe Biden elected initially in Delaware, and then through the family history and the role that he had played in it. And in that meeting, remember, I'm the son of a naval officer. Was a naval officer myself. And because I held a Q clearance, which is the equivalent of a top secret clearance.
Remember that, Q
we're
clearance.
We're audited every year. So if you receive a gift, I think the barrier was $25. Anything larger than $25, we had to disclose it to the government, because obviously anybody with a clearance, the government is watching closely that they're not influenced by the Russians, the Iranians, the Chinese, and stuff like that. So as I was listening to Jim walk through this, I have a big heart. If you talk to anybody who knows me, they would weigh in on that. I'm a kind person. And I'm thinking about the Biden family, like, how are they doing this? I know Joe decided not to run in 2016, but what if he ran in the future? Aren't they taking political risk or headline risk? And I remember looking at Jim Biden and saying, how are you guys getting away with this? Like,
now,
aren't
this
you
is
concerned?
A money shot. Another
and
one.
So he looked at me and he laughed a little bit and said, plausible deniability.
He said that out loud?
Yes. He said it directly to me, one-on-one in a cabana at the Peninsula Hotel after about a, you know, hour and a half, two-hour meeting, with me asking out of concern, how are you guys doing this? Aren't you concerned that you're going to put your brother's, you know, future presidential campaign at risk? You know, the Chinese, the stuff that you guys have been doing already in 2015 and 2016 around the world. And I just can almost picture his face where he sort of chuckles and says, you know, plausible deniability.
So he said, this is a man who's been drafting off his brother's political career for almost 50 years. He said to your face, essentially, we're lying about it.
We're lying about it.
Anyone watching this interview can look up what plausible deniability means,
yeah.
And the definition is very distinct.
Well, there you have it. That explains the entire operation